Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome to the live show. This is something we try to do every week, usually on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., where we just answer questions that have been submitted through the Whitewater Guidebook website. This is also an audio podcast. It's intended as a live YouTube show, but the audio is stripped out and put on Spotify and Apple and all that stuff, so you can listen to this separately. If you have questions during the show, just throw them in the comments and I'll get to them. I really enjoy responding to them. Otherwise, we just have two quick questions today, and we'll get through those and make this a pretty quick show. I want to add our sponsor, or talk about our sponsor today. Our sponsor is GoRafting.com, and they make river maps that are on your phone. And a lot of you are probably saying, oh, I don't want to use my phone for a map. I want to leave my phone at home and do it. Fine, do it. Use a paper map. You're welcome to. I just want to make the point, these cell phone maps are sweet. These iPhone maps are sweet. You don't have to have an iPhone. It can be any phone. These phone maps are sweet. You download an app. It's, what's it called again? The Far Out app. Yep, here's the website. It says on the website. You download the Far Out app, and then you buy the maps from the dudes that go rafting. They have these maps that have all the locations of the rapids and the camps, and there's photos that go with them and really good directions. They're really well done. And I personally think this is the future. And so if you want to do the Grand Canyon, you buy the Grand Canyon map. And they have all kinds of maps of all kinds of rivers. Let's go to shopping the guide. Sometimes they have a bundle package deal that is almost too good. Looks like they got rid of the bundle because the bundle – oh, here, they still have it. The Whitewater Classics for $60. They need to stop doing this. This is – and I sound like a used car salesperson right now, salesman right now. But, like, you're getting too much value here. Like all these maps, because you get the Grand Canyon, you get all the overnights, the classic ones. You get the Illinois. I did the Illinois map, so I know that one's pretty good. The Tatsunshini, the Tuolumne, the Rogue. Oh, I don't see the Illinois. You don't get the Illinois. And then you get maps that you probably don't need, like the Wind or the – I don't see – oh, there's the Illinois. You get the Illinois. You just for $60, this is an insane deal. And so – oh, there's a free demo as well. I didn't even know that. This is a demo that shows you can open it here. What's going on? This is kind of cool. Oh, although you guys can't see what I'm looking at right now because it's in a different thing. But anyway, it's sweet. I've used these maps in the Grand Canyon. For me, it was better than the paper map. If you are looking for an online map to rivers, this is it. I highly recommend it. If anybody out there has used these and want to leave a comment and support, that would really be nice. I can see Kid already did. The Whitewater bundle is fantastic. As they add rivers, they add them to the bundle. Yeah, so as you may buy the bundle for $60 and get rivers, it sounds like that they do in the future, right? So I don't see the Yampa on there, although the Yampa might be on there. Let's just say it's not on there. If they add the Yampa, you'll probably get it as part of the bundle. I don't know. If I was advising them, I would tell them not to do the bundle. It's too cheap. It's too good of a deal. And it's like, it would be like buying a Middle Fork of the Salmon book and like, oh, for like a little bit more, you can have all the books for all the rivers. That's just insane. So anyway, I highly recommend it. There it is. Kid, thanks for the nice comment. Sounds like the main salmon's coming soon. That would be much needed. No Yampa yet. They got Lador last year. Yeah, you guys know more than I do. Anyway, they're a sponsor of the show. I wanted to shout out to GoRafting.com. Yeah, it's really, they're super sweet. All right, so on to our questions. And we got step one, which is the talking about the sponsor. The first question, I'm going to try to read this. Without getting into full details, I was in a situation where I was the second boat. We were an 8-boat trip. This was the Middle Fork a few years ago. So I'm assuming the Middle Fork of the Salmon. Usually when somebody says the Middle Fork, it's the Middle Fork of the Salmon. Unless you're in California, then it might be the Middle Fork of the American. But I'm pretty sure it's the Salmon. Okay, anyway. A single came up the line to stop and eddy out. For some reason, the lead boat didn't stop. I stayed with the lead boat, and the third boat stayed with us. Again, we signaled to stop, and again, the lead boat did not try to eddy out. We were running up on sulfur and the lead boat went ahead and entered the rapid. I followed and stayed with the lead boat until I finally eddied out below Ramshorn, which is a ways past. Ramshorn's a bit past sulfur. It turned out the boat in the back had gotten pinned and didn't come off until everybody hiked back up and joined together to get it off. My question is, was I right in staying with the lead boat when it didn't stop? My gut was telling me to eddy out because someone was in the trouble behind us, but I felt the responsibility to the lead boat as I was his safety. The rower on the third boat felt the same. This is a good question. And I don't always read the questions ahead of time. I saw this one and I really thought about this one a lot. I could see, depending on the situation, doing either thing. My first comments are, it's really hard to send signals from the back to the front. And so when you said a signal came up the line, it's really hard to send signals ahead. So that you did that, good job on that. The best way to send signals ahead is to slow down or stop, right? Like, so if the fourth boat has a pin, the third boat just pulls over. And then by the time the first boat looks back and they don't see anybody, that's a signal, hey, something happened. I need to stop. That's how it's supposed to work. So when I read this and I see the lead boat didn't stop, I wonder, did the lead boat get a signal to stop? And did they acknowledge the symbol? Like, did they know they were supposed to stop? Right. So if it was very obvious that you signaled stop and they kept going, that's bad boating. Whoever's the lead boat is a bad boater. And it's frustrating to me because if they're told to stop, they should stop. There could have been a fatality, right? There could have been a million things, right? They need to stop. But again, I want to point out, it's hard to send signals forward in the line. It's easier back. The front boat can signal back, but for the back boats to signal front is really hard. So if they got the signal, understood the signal, and still didn't stop, that sucks. They shouldn't do that. The best way to tell the first boat to stop is you just stop. So if you're getting to sulfur, the eddy at sulfur is huge and obvious. If you get to sulfur and you eddy out and the lead boat keeps running, if it was me, I wouldn't follow them down. Like, the lead boat knows they were signaled to stop. It sounds like the real signal is boats two and three stopping. If they see that and still go on, they've chosen to go ahead and they're already not caring about the group. Why should the group care about them? That's my take. Now, if you don't think the front boat got the signal or understood the signal, yeah, you probably have a responsibility to follow them down. Or if you just think the first boat is like kind of a dummy, like they're going even though they're not supposed to, I should probably stay with them. I could see that. But I'm more worried about what's happening behind me, because there's actually something happening behind me, than the boat in front of me, who's the lead boat. The lead boat's supposed to be one of the better boaters. I'm not as worried about the lead boat, who's supposed to be better, who is being inconsiderate and not listening to the group. So I don't really have a good answer for what I would do. And no, I don't hear what I would do. If I eddied out at sulfur, and when you eddy out at sulfur, you eddy out on the right, usually at Gardell's Hole. It's a huge eddy. They're going to see you. If the lead boat enters a rapid and doesn't look behind them beforehand, that's also irresponsible. That's bad boating. If they're just like looking downstream and going and not looking back, that's not good either. But if they see you eddied out and they keep going, they've made a conscious choice to go on their own. And they will eventually stop. Like, they'll eventually be like, wow, there really is nobody behind me. But by following them, you're sort of enabling them to suck. You're saying, oh, you can be a selfish prick. I'll enable that. In my mind, if somebody's a selfish prick, like, they're in their own world. Just go be that person. So my answer to this is, that's a tough one. It's a good question. I could see both sides of it. But my assumption based on what I'm reading is the first boat is not a good boater. They might be good at moving the boat around. They might be good at running rapids. But when you look at the whole package of what it takes to be a boater, they're not that, because they are looking behind them and or they're choosing to ignore the wishes of the group, which is bad boating to me. So I would, yeah, I'm not excited about this lead boater being the lead boat. And if this happened to me and I was on the trip, I would chew that lead boater out personally. I'm not putting up with that. Like, there's just no way. If that lead boat did that, that would be a there would be words for sure. There would be words. Okay. Heidi, yet another reason for two-way radios on the river. Yeah, yes and no. It sounds like it wasn't a communication problem. It was the first boat got the signal. From what I'm reading here, they just chose not to stop. I guess a radio, you could say, hey, stop because of this. Some of the problems of radios, one of them, they don't always work that well. And so when you need, when the group expects them to work, but then they don't work, that if you depend on them and they don't work, that's a problem. You're like, oh, just radio me if something happens. And then for whatever reason, they don't work. And one reason they don't work is you drop in the river, right? Like if there's a plan to, hey, well, radio if there's a problem. Well, if there was a problem and somebody lost the radio and the communication or the radio broke or just didn't work and the communication didn't happen, there's too much dependence on the radio. The new Rocky Talkie 5-watt radios are amazing. I've used them a bunch. They actually have a really cool – let me bring it up because I can. If you do want to use radios, I've used a lot of different radios, and most of them kind of like are pretty shaky. They don't work that great. Rocky Talkie radio. And so Rocky Talkie has this original one. Let me go to the website. They have the original one that has a little carabiner attached to it. That's kind of gimmicky. Let's pull them up. This one, the Mountain Radio, the 5-watt radio. This thing is spectacular. It's waterproof. It's easy to use. And it has a little, you can get this thing that plugs into it, this waterproof hand mic. And so I leave the walkie talkie in my PFD and then clip this onto my PFD on the outside. And I can talk in rapid sometimes. So if you're going to use one, I would definitely highly suggest this walkie talkie one. It's really cool. But also, again, if there's too much dependence on them, that becomes a problem because they can get broken or lost or batteries dying, then you don't have a contingency plan. Also, I found that people on trips don't want to hear radio chatter. Like, you're on a river trip, and so if you're in boats and people are radio chattering all the time, it just takes away from the experience a little bit. So, and you know, hey, let's pull over for lunch, or I don't know, we're out there for a primitive experience, and to be just like talking on the radio, it does detract from it. It may not sound like it would sitting at home right now listening to a YouTube channel, but when you're out there, it actually does. And you start using it more than you think. Like, you're like, hey, we'll just use it for safety. And next thing you know, you're like, hey, do you see that bald eagle? Hey, what do you guys think about doing lunch in a mile? Hey, there's a cool surf wave down there. Like, you end up using it more than you intended, and it becomes a thing. Rocky Talkie 5-watt. Yeah, they're sweet. We use them for classes. So where we have to communicate things about pods and people. And so I use them for classes and they work awesome. But I have some DeWalt radios work okay, but a lot of radios I've used in the past don't work that well. And they've been more problematic than the benefit they provide because you expect them to work. You make a plan on them based on them working and they don't. And then it's worse. All right. Hopefully I answered that question. Okay. Next question. Oar setup with tall torso. Been watching your oar setup video to help dial in my boat this winter. I'm rowing a 13-foot otter, 60-inch wide, NRS frame, older 6 to 7 inch oar towers. Wasn't exactly sure to measure from. 8 to 10 foot 10 inch oars and sitting on the dry box. The geometry has never been fully customized for various reasons. Anyway, I'm hoping you have some thoughts on a couple things and how they relate to my oar setup. I'm fairly tall, 6'1", but most of my height is in my torso. In the past, I have sometimes been hitting my legs while rowing, probably some operator error involved. I was set on getting the newer, taller oar towers to accommodate these issues, but your video inspired me to hit pause and think this through. I appreciate what you do for the boating community, and thanks. Okay, so oar geometry setup is super important. And I think I try to make it as simple as possible. And if you draw like the oars and the boat and all the things, and you come up with the angles and you do seat height and all the things, you can come up with some really fancy equations that you can plug a lot of things into and find out exactly what size oar and angles and where to sit. You can do that. I'm going to tell you, the two most important things by far for that, you can tweak all these things, but if you tweak just two things, it will have the biggest, it'll make the biggest effect. The number one thing that will make the biggest effect is having the right length oars. Measuring the distance between your oar towers, your towers, multiply by 1.63, and that's your oar length. And so when I read 8 foot, if I read a 13 foot otter with a 60 inch wide NRS frame, I think that I'm pretty sure 8 foot 10 is going to be too short, just knowing those frames. So I'm pretty sure your oars are too short. I can almost for sure tell you that. And then so number one thing is oar length. And the number two thing is seat height. Like people like to sit on boxes and they put a seat mount and then a seat. When you sit really high, it puts your oars in the wrong place. No matter how tall your torso is, your torso height does matter, right? It does. It plays a role. Your torso height does play a role. I'm just saying it's like 3% when like 90% is seat height and oar length. Right. So it does. It's like an extension of seat height. So having your seat be high, if your seat's high and you have a tall torso, you're really in trouble. But what the problem is, people have their seats 6 inches to a foot higher than where they should be sometimes when your torso is only 2 inches, 3 inches taller than the average person. So it's not that big of a deal. So I would say like get your oar length right. Like get that right. And I think you have the wrong size oars. And it's a real bummer because this is what happens is people buy their gear from somebody used. And so they have somebody else's oars, or they buy it from a company that sells gear, rafts, frames, oars, who these companies should be experts on fitting, on oar length, on a right frame. And honestly, in my experience, most companies that sell you packages, unfortunately, don't know what they're doing. It's really annoying to me, actually. And I'm saying that because I teach a lot of classes and people show up to the class with some brand new thing they just bought. And I quickly figure out the reason they're struggling rowing. I almost said oaring. That's embarrassing. They struggle rowing is because their oar length is wrong. I give them a pair of my oars, the correct length, and they have much more success. It's not like I've just seen this a couple times. I see it over and over and over. And I've never seen it where they're like, oh no, I wish I had my short oars. They always like, oh yeah, that is better. Now, what do I do with these brand new square tops I bought? Because when you buy oars, you're spending $1,000 or more. And to be like, oh, I need them 6 inches longer. You just, what do? You sell them, use them, buy another set of oars? Oars are expensive. And so people just deal with their oars that are too short. And so that's why I put out the videos on oar length and why it's so important to get the word out. Because I want you to get the right oar to begin with, not have to buy the wrong oar and then buy new oars. Anyway, I'm pretty sure your oar length is wrong. Just based, I think the 60 inch wide frame and the 8 foot 10 is not the right way to go. I'd have to measure your oar locks, but your oar locks, I'm guessing, dictate like 9 foot 3 inches to 9.5 foot oars. That's probably what they dictate. Depends on how you're splayed at your oar towers a little bit too. That's a factor. And the oar tower height makes it. So when the other thing is, because oar towers, I'm on a lot of tangents here. This is an important thing. Oar towers are splay out on the, especially the NRS ones. So if you go longer, like, oh, I'll just make them taller. They splay out more. So you need even longer oars. And so when I teach a class, I see somebody with a 13 foot boat and they need 10.5 foot oars. Because they're running 10 inch oar locks. So I would say avoid the 10 inch oar locks. The 8 inch NRSs are perfect. The 6 inches are too short, but I could see why you might use the six inch ones. The 10 inch ones, in my opinion, should never be used unless all you're doing is class 2 and 3. If you're just like, I do class 2, not even three, two. If you're a Utah boater and you're just doing Desolation Canyon, it doesn't matter how long your oar towers are, really. But if you want to do class three, class four, have good ergonomics, please go with the 8-inch oar towers and then fix your seat. So going back here to the question, and then it's seat height. People sit too tall and then the oars are down low. So they fix that with longer oar towers and they're up here, but then the oars are too short. So get your seat height lower somehow. And if you're just sitting on a dry box, that's probably great. Unless the dry box sits a bunch above your frame. I have to see the dry box. You know, if it sits on the frame, but it's 6 inches above the frame, that's an issue. You may have to get a different dry box or do something else. I don't know. But having a taller torso, you really want to get that seat lower. That's how you can make up for that. Just really get that seat down lower. So that's my thought there. And then sometimes hitting your legs while rowing, that shouldn't happen. And that's probably because even though you're sitting on the dry box could be too high above the frame, causing your knees to be too high. And also you could also push your oar towers out more. Try pushing oar towers out a little further. I usually put the oar towers about where my knees are, but try a different oar, because then the rest stuff is so adjustable. Try a different position laterally and then get your seat lower. I think that's the big stuff. And we have a comment here. My friend has 9.5-foot oars on a 60-inch frame seat spot. Yeah, I forget which one is the 60-inch frame, but I forget. What are the frame lengths on NRS boats? Let's look this up. I can probably figure this out. NRS, or I'm going to use the Longhorn frame as the example. I use these frames so much. There's a 60. So 60 is the shortest one. Yeah, the 66 is the one I think we use 9.5-foot oars with. And I think the 66-inch frame with the 9.5 is sweet. The 60-inch, we usually use like nines, maybe. And sometimes 9.5s. Sometimes 9.5s do fine there too. So, but 8-10 is definitely a bit short. I have to do the math, but I'm guessing you're gonna need like a 9'2" or something like that. Yeah, 60 is a small. There's a 48 and a 54. Oh no, I could be wrong. Sorry, I missed that. I have to go measure mine. Which lengths? I have three widths of these frames. Okay, so Mike's using 10-foot oars on the 66. Mike, did you use my equation? That could be it. So the 66-inch frame, I think you're right. Let me take that back. I'm pretty sure with a 66-inch frame, we use the 10s. With a 60-inch frame, we use the 9.5s. And with the 54-inch frame, we use the 9s or the 9.2s. I think that's what we do. But I don't always remember. I'm pretty sure that makes sense. And Mike, if you use my equation to figure that out, I think we're on the same page then. So if you should be using 9'6" oars and yours are 8'10", that's the number one biggest issue by far. Easily. You will instantly improve your boating, your posture, everything by having the right length oars. And then the second priority is seat height. Make sure you're sitting low, right? It's like almost as low close to the frame height as you can. Like, that's good. I think these NRS frames where you're sitting on a seat above the frame, that's a good distance above the frame. But if you're tall, you want to sit even lower if you can. Or if you have a long torso. I'm 6'2", but I have like probably an average torso. So, and this works perfect for me. So if you have a longer torso than me, trying to sit a little bit lower even would certainly help. Mike says, I used your equation as a high end and a different equation as a low end, and 10 was in the middle. Interesting. Are you using the 8-inch oar towers? Because I think I used the equation. Yeah, I have to look. Our equation to me is not the high end. It is the answer. And the other day I ran an 11-foot cat. It was really big water on the wind. I ran an 11-foot cat with 10-foot oars. And normally it would take 9.5s. But for like the extra power, I ran 10. So I think that like the equation gives you the right length. And then I'll go longer if I need more power. 8-inch towers. Interesting.
Yeah, I have to look at. It's too bad I don't have all the answers perfectly, but I think with 8-inch towers and a 66-inch frame, you should be 10-inch ore towers, depending on how you splay your ore towers out. I like to run mine, like, you might splay your ore towers out more or in. I don't know. It also depends on, like, how you run the ore towers like this. But thanks for your extra info. Okay, so a lot of answer here. I'm going to sum this one up. And let's see. I'm fairly, seat. So ore length, seat height, and then all the other stuff matters, but not nearly as much as those two. Mike says your ore equation leads to 10.32. Got it. That's for the 66-inch frame. I'm guessing, Mike, it's because you're splitting your ores out more than I do. I bring those ore towers tighter in. I'm guessing that's why. But yeah, man, it's good to have this information. Okay, what's up, Fortran of Whitewater? How you doing, man? And Mr. Cronin, dude, you're back in the boating world. What's the latest nudes in Cronin Inflatables? We got to get you back on a show and hear the latest in Cronin Inflatables. So that's it. Thanks for the help. I braced my wife thinking longer oars would be the answer. Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. There's some things I want to buy right now too. And I'm also doing the same thing. Like just, hey, I might be buying this thing coming up in the next few months. I understand that. So longer oars will definitely help you. I am pretty confident in that. Zach, scale 1 to 10, how illegal has Celestial Falls become? I have no idea. I've never run it. I've never even been there in person. I have no idea. When I was younger, I was more into like just drive to a waterfall and drop over it. But as I'm older, the idea of driving somewhere just to run one rapid, it just seems insane. So it's like, and one where it's like, it's a 50-foot drop. Like you could get hurt. Like it just doesn't appeal to me. But I could see how it's appealing to experience that. It's a pretty straightforward 50-foot waterfall, I guess. But I have no idea. I mean, I haven't even heard of anybody kayaking it for a while. So maybe pretty illegal. Okay, I think that's it for the show. Thank you, everybody, for watching. It's good to see a lot of old friends in the comments. That's it for this episode, and we'll see y'all next Tuesday, hopefully Tuesday.